Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Thief of Crowns by Alan Niles, narrated by Jonathan Johns. Chapter 1. A First Start. As I lay tense, waiting for the next round of torture to begin, I took comfort in the fact that I had given my all for my people. Everything I had done was for the betterment of my empire, Zobrus. Of course, my hard work and sacrifices had gone unappreciated by the commoners. I heard rumors that they made comments about my insatiable appetite for the finest feasts, garments, and palaces. And it's true that I made my way from one noblewoman's bed to the next. But I was the young emperor of a vibrant kingdom. Who could blame me for sampling all of the best I had to offer? Selfish, spoiled Kronos, they'd called me. How ungrateful. Still, perhaps there was some truth in what they said. Perhaps there was more that I could have done, been more charitable, more empathetic, kinder. But even if all they said about me was true, surely nothing I had done was horrible enough to justify the agony about to be unleashed upon me by the man approaching with outstretched arms. I tried desperately to turn away from him, knowing what would come next. But it was no use. Gucci, Gucci, goo, the man taunted as he tickled me. I did not know how, and I certainly did not know why, but some weeks ago I had found myself reborn in the body of a baby in some entirely other world from the empire I once ruled. Apparently it is a world of sadistic imbeciles with a penchant for abusing defenseless souls such as myself. The man inhaled sharply before he continued. Oh, goo, 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 goo. Commanding the peasant to unhand me proved to be a fruitless endeavor. Please, no, stop, I thought to say, but the words merely echoed through my mind, with not so much as a giggle escaping my mouth. As lord of this house, I decree all babies must pay one raspberry tax. The tickling had ended, but the man now blew directly on my stomach, causing a horrid, thunderous sound. Cease this at once. I am royalty. I think I'm going to pee. Once more my tongue betrayed me, sputtering out uncontrollable laughter in place of words. I wriggled my tiny arms, but my pleas went either ignored or unnoticed. All right, Krieg, I think that's enough playing for now, said the woman lying in bed. Let me hold him a while. The man, Krieg, as the woman called him, relented and carried me over to her. All right, little guy, you got off easy this time. Spend some time with mummy. Finally, some respite. I wanted to thank the peasant woman and explain that I was not typically one to be caught in such demeaning acts of nuisance. But before I could even form the thought, she was on me.
Gods above, look at your itty-bitty toes. I just want to gobble them all up. Num, 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 num.
Deceiver.
The woman held my feet to her mouth and alternated between kisses and nums. Again, some giggles managed to escape me, but the woman's tactic proved far inferior to Krieg's methods of forcing laughter. Were I not confined to this weak, infantile body, I would conjure a firestorm to consume your flesh and be freed of this torment. However, considering my current state, I'll just have to use what little resources I have available. Thankfully, that seems to include my ingenuity. With my will sufficiently steeled, I found myself able to resist the urge to giggle and instead began to cry.
Oh no, don't cry, Crow, she said. Mummy was only teasing you. No one is going to gobble your feet, I promise.
The woman held me and rocked me back and forth, humming softly. I stopped crying. Yes, they actually named me Crow. The peasants of this world have a sick sense of humor if they seriously consider a winged disease carrier an appropriate name for their child. I had glimpses and fragments from my life as an emperor, but the details of my transition here still eluded me. I couldn't remember falling asleep or waking up as a baby. There were aspects of my life that I remembered with crystalline clarity, but other aspects were beginning to fade. The last memory I had was in the throne room. I was on my way somewhere when my vision, I think I was dizzy, and then, ack, trying to recall the thought was making my skull throb.
Did I just keel over and die? That must be it. Does there exist a more tragic fate than the death of an emperor as young and handsome as me? I looked up at the woman holding me now, her red hair falling from its messy bun, her cheeks full and freckled, her smile. I didn't recognize her, nor did I recognize this Krig fellow. If this were a dream, wouldn't the people claiming to be my parents actually resemble their likeness? I attempted to pinch my cheeks just to be sure, but ended up slapping them instead. Curse these baby hands. But the cottage and its residents did not disappear, and I did not awaken as an emperor. I couldn't make any sense of it, especially not with this damned incessant humming. I gave out a yawn and felt the weight of my eyelids grow heavy. When the battle against my shutting eyelids seemed a futile effort, I felt myself lifted up from the woman's embrace. "I've got him, Gwen," Griggs said as he carried me. He kissed her on the forehead before taking me to a nearby crib and placing me down inside. "Sleep well, Crow," Griggs said, leaving my forehead with a kiss of its own. "At least they're kind," I thought, as I drifted to sleep. "Even if they are peasants." Chapter 2. The Magical and the Mundane. I clung to the memories of my past life as they came to me, as though their previous warmth and delight could take me out of diapers and back to my days as an emperor. There was nothing I missed more than the royal feasts and celebrations. The sounds of revelry could be heard through the thick castle walls on nights like those. Glasses and plates clanged, and lords and ladies cried out, either in delight or awe at each new dish, each entertainer or performer hired to amuse them. The opulent decorations. It was a feast for all five senses. Their merriment echoed through the chambers and halls, from the highest tower to the lowest dungeon. One of my favorite memories was of the feast at the spring equinox, notable for the rare honey mead we'd been served, and the particularly pleasant company I had that evening. A group of beautiful ladies gathered around me. They always did, of course. I was both handsome and rich, but tonight I garnered special attention by using one of my magical artifacts to bedazzle them with tricks. I plucked a flower from the centerpiece on the table and placed it in the palm of one lucky lady's hand, closing her fingers around it gently. A twist of my hand, and the blue gem affixed to my ring flashed and glistened. I gave a kiss to her hand to seal the spell. Truly it did nothing, but how would they know? And she opened her hand to release a cloud of fluttering butterflies.
"That's incredible," they said.
"Well," I told them, "when an emperor wriggles his fingers, magic always follows." Of course, that was when Yarrow arrived. He had a most uncanny knack for sensing when fun was being had, like catching the smoky scent of a fire. He also had the knack for seeking to stamp it out before it had the chance to spread. But even his attempts couldn't soil this memory.
"Your Highness," he started.
"Grand Vizier,"
I replied in an overly serious tone, giggles from my company following suit. Yarrow ignored their laughter and forged ahead.
"Perhaps your artifact could be put to better use than entertaining your guests. I believe the performers have that taken care of. Conjuring these insects could cause your guests to lose their appetite."
"Yarrow, if I'm not to use my artifacts for entertainment, then what the hell's is the point of having them? You have a wand yourself, don't you?
Try flaunting it more often. It's great, though judging by your stiffness, I can wager where you keep it." Everyone laughed at that. Well, everyone but Yarrow, but getting him to crack a smile was near impossible. Now, speaking of appetites, I returned to kissing the hands of my lovely guests. Hands led to arms, which led to necks. You get the idea. The memory of feasts and parties of the past only made me miss my previous life more, and long for my familiar palace from the chilly, ill-insulated walls of the hovel where I now lived. It was storming outside the cottage. It had been for several days now. An assortment of pots and pans laid about the tables and floor to catch any rain that found its way through the cracks of the thatched roof above us. Grig was kneading by the hearth, striking against flint to spark a flame. Gwen moved us closer to him, and I could see the cold breaths escaping his lips. Even as she bounced me in her arms, a shiver would reveal itself, and though their voices wore the convincing disguise of calm, I could see my parents were scared. Is there enough?
Gwen asked.
Sure, Grig said. For now, at least. If I can get the fire going. But I think the kindling may have gotten too wet from the rain.
Even as he was admitting defeat, Grig never stopped striking the flint.
It's been storming like this for days, and there's no sign of when it will end, which will make game harder to find. And no nearby vendors are crazy enough to be out in this weather.
I couldn't decide if my father was genuinely informing us of the situation, or if he was simply speaking about each issue aloud to himself, as if the solution would come tumbling out along with them. I also wrestled with the concept that this situation warranted any worry whatsoever. In my former empire as Zobrus, I would never sentence my people to live in such squalor. If I had my artifacts, I could simply dissipate the storm or produce some meal and furs. Hells, I wouldn't even need an artifact to produce a fire. Pyromancy is quite possibly the most rudimentary circle of arcane that exists. A child could probably... I cooed at the thought. I made a face that usually indicated that I had an idea, or it was time to be changed. Thankfully, this time, it was the former. I looked down at my hand, clenching and releasing my fingers slowly. Admittedly, in my infantile state, I tended to forget I could control my limbs from time to time. What if... I reached out toward the fireplace, performing the same clenching and releasing of my fingers. I twisted my hand from side to side. A hair-thin line of smoke snuck out of the center of the kindling, and dull orange embers began to glow. Just as I felt like my arm might drop from exhaustion, a flame ignited. It worked. Gwen and Krieg stared at the small fire, stunned, then shifted their astonished looks toward me.
So, we have a fire. What's for dinner? They may not be able to hear my thoughts, but surely they could hear my stomach rumbling.
That's when Krieg spun around and grabbed the nearest pot off the floor, half filled with rainwater, and doused the fireplace. I watched the embers die out with confused frustration. My hunger was turning from discomfort to pain.
Krieg, maybe it would have been fine tonight, said Gwen.
Absolutely not. You know the risk for us if we use magic. Just one martial tracing spell worked to our village, and we could lose everything.
No one is patrolling in this storm.
It's not safe, Gwen.
My father's voice tore through the room like a crack of thunder, and the silence that followed was equally deafening. I'd not heard my father speak like this before, and judging by the look in my mother's eyes, Gwen was not accustomed to it either. Grig placed his hands on my face and looked at me in the eyes. His face was a mix of sympathy and concern, but his voice carried a solemn firmness.
Crow, I know you're too young to understand, but you can never, ever do that again.
A hand moved from my face and held my hand tightly, its tininess starkly evident when held in his.
No magic.
Grig's eyes shifted upward to Gwen's, offering apology for his outburst. Gwen smiled weakly and handed me to him.
We have some jerky, I think, but tomorrow we really will need something else. It should last us for tonight.
I stared up at my father, my lips quivering as the wind and rain howled outside. No magic. Chapter 3. A Day in the Market. The grass was still damp, the road was speckled with deep pockets of mud, and the sky persisted a lackluster grey, but I was thrilled to simply be outside of the cottage. The storm had passed the previous day, which meant it was time for Grig to go hunting and refill the larder, and for Gwen to visit the market square. In the sling on my shoulder's back, I couldn't help but feel like I had my very own throne to survey all the excitement. Life is full of little ironies, isn't it? Birds chirped and sang as they flew past vibrant, blooming flowers. Carriages clattered along the road while horses snorted or whinnied. Vendors barked at passers-by who might be interested in their wares and goods. The sad and somber backdrop proved no match against the clamour of this town's inhabitants. As my mother and I strolled on, the good mornings offered by neighbours shifted from
Gwendolyn
to
Miss,
and then we eventually found ourselves in the centre of a bustling square. With all the commotion, it was difficult for me to keep focus on the tasks my mother had set to do. Carpenters repaired roofs, clerics rang bells, criers reported the latest word from the capital. There was a melodious quality to it all. It could have been my new eyes, but I couldn't think of a single time I experienced such beauty, not in all of Zobrus.
Well, would you get a gander at this little cutie?
Proclaimed a shrill voice.
What's the darling called, Gwen?
My attention snapped to the present when the door shut behind us, blocking the cacophony outside. My mother was removing pouches of grain and herbs from the satchel at her side. Krieg and I have taken to calling him Crow.
Ah, sure, I should have guessed. He's got the feathers to match.
The woman tussled the wispy black hair on my head, or rather what little of it there was.
Just a tiny thing, sure, but I can tell he'll grow big and strong, like his daddy Krieg, eh?
Despite my best efforts, I could have managed to move away from the woman's hand. I'd not the slightest clue how my mother actually understood the words dropping out of this wench's mouth. I was not even entirely sure what language she was attempting to speak.
Thanks again, Gwen. This should be enough to hold over. Some soup's there already, love.
Gwen untied the sling and placed me on the floor. I had almost forgotten just how small I truly was, and craned my neck to stare up at the two.
Behave good for your Auntie Bev now, Crow,
she instructed me as she tied an apron on.
Mummy won't be gone long.
It was nearly impossible to see from my angle, but she ladled something clunky and brown from a large pot and filled some bowls before heading out another door. I was able to catch a glimpse out the crack of the door as it was shutting. My mother greeted each of the patrons by name, but few returned so much as a look, let alone a hello or thank you. There were men, women, and children, all skinny and all dirty. Some were lying on the ground, coughing. Some looked injured. And others didn't even move. The door closed. This place was nothing like my former empire, Zobrus, and especially nothing like the capital, Ulthar. In my other life, the very idea of worrying about food was absolutely foreign. Feasts could be created by the common citizen, even with lesser artifacts. I started to wonder why these peasants weren't taking better care of themselves, when my father's words rang through my mind. No magic. I suddenly remembered the storm that had raged for nearly a week. Oh, right. It must have been difficult for them to stay dry without it. My thoughts were interrupted by the squeaking of a mouse. It scurried across the kitchen floor, standing on its hind legs and sniffing at the air every few paces. I crawled closer to investigate. The mouse didn't seem to mind me being near it, and concerned itself only with some crumbs it had found. It seems like everyone is hungry here.
Ah, get out of here, you filthy vermin!
Auntie Bev grabbed a broom and swept at the mouse.
Folks sick enough as it were without you scurrying about. Out with ye!
She continued to curse as she placed the broom against the wall and set back to what she was doing.
Damn storm passing must have driven them out of the mud. Not in my kitchen.
Her words reminded me of my past, the way my advisers and peers referred to the peasants of Zobrus. It was Yarrow's voice that entered my mind this time. Gutter rats! Filth! The titles of filth and vermin we had so cavalierly associated with commoners were now fully applicable to myself. I still didn't know why I was here, how I was here, but whether I liked it or not, I wasn't going anywhere. So I decided, if I had been given a new start, then I will make the most out of it. Position be damned. Gwen returned to the kitchen carrying empty plates and bowls, setting them aside and untying her apron.
Bev, they've all had at least a bowl, so should be fine for the time being. How's the little one doing? Hardly a handful. He just looked about, really. Looks like he won't be growing into a troublemaker, especially you there as his mum.
I stared confoundedly as my mother secured me into the sling. What are you saying, woman? Bev handed the tip of a bread loaf to me.
Big and strong, eh?
The woman said their farewells, and with my throne secured, Mother started down the road. I watched the distance grow between myself and the market square, as I chewed a corner of the loaf of bread. Considerably more difficult to do without teeth, but it was actually quite tasty. That's when I spotted the mouse that had been tossed from the kitchen earlier, noticing it following behind us before performing its familiar halt, stand and sniff. I broke off some crumbs from the bread loaf, tossed them to the mouse and waved farewell. May as well befriend my fellow vermin. The song of the bustling square drifted further with the final scene, a mob of villagers shouting at the crier as the bell rang overhead. Wonder what that's about. I took another bite of bread. Chapter 4. the rich and the ragged. I stared out the cottage window and admired the garden. Mother was quite the horticulturalist, filling the small space she had with herbs and vegetables. But what captivated me most of all were the flowers, lining the perimeter of our little garden. Was a multitude of flowers, which showcased what seemed to be the entirety of the colour spectrum. The flowers were sectioned in neat and orderly portions, yet they grew wildly within their space, abandoning all ideation of segregation. Royal blues tangled into bright yellows, which hovered below blushing pinks and reds, made all the more vibrant from the recent rain. I watched bees bounce between them, thinking how even these tiny creatures must obey their monarch, when my attention drifted upwards to the neighbours across the way. Whatever intrigue they shared must have been quite upsetting, for the two carried sullen faces with the faint tint of disbelief. What the peasantry lacks in most aspects, they certainly seemed to make up for it with gossip.
"Oh, Craig, it was an awful sight,"
my mother told him.
"Plenty of faces already familiar to Beverley's, but there were neighbours there that I've thought had reserves to last them through the season at least, and others still that I had never seen before."
My father was working at the table in the kitchen, skinning a squirrel.
"Must have been the storm. Donovan mentioned lots of families having food spoiled with their cellars flooding, and our village didn't even have the worst of it. It's no wonder they went to Bev's. Who were the others?"
"Folk from Logris. Apparently the storm destroyed many of their homes, ripped from the ground like weeds by a gardener's hand."
"Logris? That's a silly name for a village. It seems my spirit had not only abandoned Zobrus, but all manner of culture as well." I crawled in my parents' direction, in case they required more of my opinions, which was probable.
"Well, not everyone is fortunate enough to live in a fortress as sturdy as ours," my father said.
My mother looked at the pots and pans hanging in the kitchen, still drying from the rainwater poured out of them.
"Did you have enough stew for everyone?"
"Yes, we did, but only just barely. Make us mercy. We should have enough bread and broth to last a bit, but we'll need fresh meat as well. Any luck on your hunt?"
"You're looking at it."
My father passed the skinned carcass to my mother, who began cutting and dividing the meat.
"The storm must have made the game sparse too. It shouldn't be a problem for long."
"I hope it isn't. It's not as if we'll receive any aid from the Emperor or his noble subjects. Have you heard his new decree? He's demanding additional crops from every village for the next year."
My mother's tone quieted, but the resentment in it was palpable.
"Wait, what was this all about?"
"Doubtly ask for less once the year is up," father replied.
"What does he need the crops for?"
"Oh, as if he would tell the likes of us. Everyone in the village has their speculations, though. It's all anyone can talk about. My bet is on something superficial. Honestly, he's as bad as the last one."
"Well, what can you expect from men who place their needs above everyone else? These emperors do nothing for the people except sentence them to foul, magicless lives. They covet artifacts in that palace of theirs, just to conquer the lesser lands within their reach. The nobles would sooner watch people like us die than lend a hand, for fear it may become dirtied."
Despite the clear contempt my father held for the ruling class above him, he scooped me up and bounced me whilst wearing a big grin on his face. Had my mind reverted to the capabilities of a newborn along with the rest of my form, I'd be none the wiser of his hate. Expansion, I could understand. An artifact of power should be safeguarded from those who don't understand how to use them. But at least I strived for greatness within my empire. Whoever this emperor was certainly sounded like a self-absorbed piece of
sit,
my mother said as she carried a pot of bubbling stew from the fire toward the table.
You deserve to rest after your long day. You'll need to feel fully capable tomorrow if you and Donovan are to catch a stag for Bev's kitchen.
My father set me back down within my crib.
Sure, quite the optimist. We'll be fortunate to catch anything larger than squirrels.
Anything you and your guildmates can put on a table would be more than the crown provides.
Shall we pack our belongings and head for the nearest kingdom over?
My father teased.
I hear the nobles are much kinder out east. Hardly any beheadings.
If it were truly different, I begin walking today, but I think I'll save my feet the blisters. Royalty is all alike. No, my faith lies in the skill of my husband.
My mother gripped father's hand, shaking it exaggeratedly.
So bring us back something plump and plentiful before the whole village starves.
Royalty is all alike, I suppose, with what limited perspective this world offered.
One would reasonably arrive at that conclusion, but still, the notion stung. If only there was some way she could have witnessed me in my previous life. Firm, but just. I, of course, was not without my critics, but it was expected that one's subjects may not always understand the way of things. Like a child punished by their parents, it can be difficult for the child to understand that it is done in their interest. My mother approached me.
I suppose you'll be wanting your dinner now as well, Crow. Come along, come to Mummy.
She lifted me from the crib and cradled me in her arms. I suppose the point was moot now. I would instead have to focus on surviving this life, as it seemed the hardships would be plentiful. Still, it was hard not congratulating myself on the way I ruled my own empire, given the competition's subpar performance. Chapter 5 Where I'd Gone. The rain had picked up again, not nearly as intensively as it had during the storm, but there was no need for pots to be taken from the kitchen. It was steady, though, and only so loud as to drown out the singing of the crickets and toads. The dull murmur of thunder rumbled in the distance, my father's snore seeming to echo their low churn in the not-so-distant reaches of the cottage. Rain never failed to put me to sleep before. As a young emperor, I had commanded my advisers to fetch me a master sigilist, simply so he could inscribe a spell into the fabric of my pillow. When I laid my head against it, it would rumble with the same dulcet tones that so often accompanied dark clouds, and the pitter-patter of rain would be projected about the room, sending me into the deep recesses of slumber, before you could say, All hail Kronos. Yet there I lay, eyes open, fully immune to the spell of the storm song. I couldn't manage to slow my mind. My parents' discussion of the Emperor's latest decree earlier that day held a higher volume than the thunder and snoring combined. They had not granted him a single ounce of credit, and I couldn't help but take their pointed words personally. I mean, if what they said was true, then their points were valid. It sounded like this emperor did not allow his subjects to use magic at all, which seemed rather oppressive. In Zobrus, any child who was born imbued with the gift of magic was offered the means to practice their spellcraft. My father, or rather, my other father, my royal father, had me train extensively to master control of the arcane the moment I showed signs of being imbued. That fire I conjured in the hearth sprang into my mind. I couldn't decide if it was a blessing or a curse that I was again born and imbued, but whether it was a gift or a misfortune, it was certainly rare. Only a handful of commoners were born imbued back in Zobrus. Perhaps my spirit carried that skill with it into this life. Still, I could understand the choice. In Zobrus, magic was enhanced through artifacts. But even without the use of an artifact, an unpracticed imbued could cause quite the devastation. Forbidding magic use can sometimes serve the interests and safety of the realm. I was surprised my parents did not understand that. Then there was the matter my father had brought up, the way he painted this emperor as some bully who conjured the lesser lands around him. Well, obviously, it is the responsibility of an emperor to shelter lesser kingdoms neath the cloak of his power. That's why they're lesser. The common people were clearly incapable of knowing the hardships that emperors face. It was not so long ago that I was the target of such critiques. They simply don't understand how tough it is to rule. Light flooded the cottage in an instant, pouring through the windows and structural cracks before disappearing and throwing the room's interior back into darkness. If I was to determine if this emperor's actions were justified or not, I needed to learn of my location. Familiarizing myself with this village's history would surely glean some much-needed insight. There must be a book that contained information about the surrounding villages somewhere. I stood up in my crib, my stance punctuated with a delayed roar from the clouds. Getting out of my crib proved more difficult than I cared to admit. The height of my prison extended over my head even when I stood, and climbing was out of the question, as I could only stay standing by gripping the bars for balance. Through the wooden slits I could see the silhouette of our bookshelf across the room. Sitting on the second shelf from the top, I saw my prize, a thick tome bound in red leather,
a gold compass upon its spine, piercing...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?